Do you want a beautiful lawn? Enter True Green, the easiest way to get a great lawn. Just water and mow and they'll do the rest. Weed control, fertilization, aeration, and more. True Green is the official lawn care treatment provider of the PGA Tour. And they have a verified best price, which guarantees you the lowest price with no compromise on quality. You do you. Let True Green do your lawn care. Visit TrueGreen.com, TrueGreen.com to get the best lawn at the best price with the best people. Guaranteed.
You are listening to Absent Minded, brought to you by HabsEyesOnThePrize.com.
The tournament is here. Talking about March Madness, of course, folks. And BetOnline is your bracket headquarters for this season. With the best bracket contests out there and odds, lines, and info on every game and every round right up until the national championship, you can access the most up-to-the-minute wagering information anytime from your desktop or your mobile devices, and even track your bracket real-time all the way through the tournament. So head to BetOnline today and get in on all the action. Remember to use promo code BELIEVE, that's B-L-E-A-V, for your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. BetOnline, the game starts here.
Hello and welcome to Absent Minded. It's Patrick Bexell. I'm here with Hadi Kalakesh of Dover Scouting and his own scouting service, more or less now. Hadi, are you excited with the draft coming up? Prospects going, getting ready for the under-18s?
Yeah, absolutely. It's going to be really fun. U18 Worlds is a good time to delve into a lot of footage. And yeah, after that, it's pretty much just reviewing all our tape and putting out our final rankings. But we have some updated rankings at Dauber Prospects coming out in April. So just scheduling that, scheduling the meeting, setting up everyone's rankings, all that good stuff. It's going to be a great time.
I totally agree with you. This is one of the hecticest seasons of Montreal Canadian for Montreal Canadian fans as well, and yep. Obviously had Eyes on the Prize because we're in the lottery picks again.
Absolutely, it's a good draft to have a lottery pick. I think there's so far for me right now, there's about 10 to 12 kind of top six forward prospects, you know, in terms of potential, or top four defensemen. So it's like there's a lot of depth here. I just think there's a significant step down from 2 to 3. So hopefully, fingers crossed, the Habs win the lottery and we get a game breaker.
Okay, we're not going to talk about Montreal and draft that much, but because we're going to talk about one of the defenders of Montreal Canadiens or prospects, anyways. But what happens if Montreal picks a defender with the first pick in the draft this year again?
I would be confused because, if you look at Laval right now in the AHL, Logan Mailloux, Justin Barron, David Reinbacher is the right side. At the NHL level, Jaden Struble, Jordan Harris, Caden Gooley, Mike Matheson to a certain extent. I mean, and, you know, in the system, you know, Adam Engstrom, Lane Hudson, like how many more, like where would a defenseman slot in there? Like that's my concern. And I don't see, like, if you look at the forward core, it's a first line and then pretty much a bunch of guys. So it's like, it's something needs to give on the forward prospect side. I hope they really go for the highest upside forward, because at some point, I mean, they've stacked up on defensemen. We're good on that end. We've got great goalie prospects in the system as well. Fowler, Vlalkin, Jakub Dobesh. Like, I think what's really, really missing with the Habs is a potential top line prospect. And you can get that in the top five. Like, you know, the likes of Caden Lindstrom, Berkeley Catton, you know, those kinds of guys are going to be available, you know, depending on how much you see his upside or depending on how low the Habs pick, maybe Cole Eiserman. Like there are a lot of options to potentially find a top liner. So, yeah.
There you have it. We're going to talk about KHL, of Bogdan Konyushkov's rise to stardom and to captaincy, at least. We should say that. And yeah. It's been a really impressive season for Konyushkov. If you read the article, or if you're going to read the article, we have tried to show that while Konyushkov's teammates and league as a whole in general has gotten worse, Konyushkov has taken a step forward.
Yep.
And how would you describe the league, and how do you describe Konyushkov's step forward?
Yeah, so it's a league from which a lot of, you know, North Americans and Europeans that didn't manage to get an NHL contract usually would gravitate to, but stopped gravitating to. We saw a lot of imports to the Swiss National League, a lot of imports to the SHL, to the Liga in consequence of everything that happened with Russia and Ukraine and the lack of availability for visas, the extra vetting, the extra restrictions. So it's a league that's dropped in quality, especially, I would say, at the KHL and VHL levels, but also at the MHL level to a certain extent, because junior players that would be playing full seasons in the MHL are actually being called up to play with the pro teams because of a lack of roster spots for Europeans, that kind of thing. They need to fill out the roster, and there's opportunities there for the junior players. So, you know, players like Igor Chernyshov, who I think in normal circumstances would have probably spent the year in the MHL, has been pretty much spending the whole year in the KHL, or at least spent the majority of his games in the KHL. Same thing for Anton Salaev with Torpedo, Nikita Artamonov. So it's become a lot more of a developmental league than it used to be. These young players are getting a lot of more ice time because they don't have North Americans taking their roster spots. But the result of that is that the quality overall of the league has dropped, and there's a significant gap. Like, the gap for me between the SKAs and the Dynamos and those teams versus middle of the pack and lower end teams of the KHL has grown. You know, there's a bigger gap there.
You mentioned the juniors coming in. That should really be good, though, for development in regards to the future, right?
Absolutely. I mean, as a fan of prospects and as a prospect analyst and scout, I mean, I'd love it. It's great to watch, because I remember even 2-3 years ago, the likes of Danilo Yurov playing 13 seconds on average of ice time in the KHL. And it's like, why is he at this level? Send him down. Same thing for
Matt. That was the opening face-off, more or less, and that was it.
Basically, he would make one mistake and just watch the rest of the game from the bench. So I'm glad to see this progress, this development, but I think it's unfortunate that it was forced rather than have it be a shift in mindset and mentality in the KHL. But overall, I think that especially for me as a fan of prospects, I love to be able to see the likes of Igor Chernyshov, Nikita Artamonov, and Anton Slaya, these types of players, play significant minutes at a level where they're challenged, where they're competing against men. I mean, that's super important for me.
Yeah, and you mentioned in another way, or in the next sentence, more or less, that the gap between the SKAs, the CSKAs, and the Dynamos, mm-hmm. they are old army teams, and obviously old KGB teams as well, with Dynamo. But with that in mind, and I have to agree with you there, because it almost looked like SKA sleepwalked into the playoffs or the month before the playoffs when they started to hit the notes properly. Yeah. And you saw that they lost the first game to Torpedo, a little bit surprising, but won an overtime game that went into second or third overtime, I forgot. And Konyushkov playing almost 40 minutes in that game. But yeah. but after that, it was more or less, a walk in the park for SKA. They geared up, they're ready for the playoffs, and there is a big discrepancy within the league.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think in that series, you know, Konyushkov did everything he could, but at some point, you know, you just run into a bulldozer of a team. You know, it's the same as Boston University versus Boston College the other day. Like, Boston College just bulldozed through every opponent they face. I mean, they massacred Maine 8-1, and Maine is the seventh team in the NCAA, the seventh top team in the NCAA. So it's just, you know, when you're facing a team of this caliber with this much depth, I think at some point Torpedo just ran out of players that can play at their level, and Konyushkov was just being thrown there for every second shift. And it's, I mean, he just at the end there, he made a costly mistake. But, you know, after playing 37 minutes, especially as a kind of below average skater, you run out of gas very quickly when your skating mechanics aren't as polished and as fluid as other prospects, and you're playing that much. It was just a matter of time before something went wrong, and it did.
Indeed, and you know, let's face it, we're always talking about his skating, but there is one mm-hmm. thing that we rarely speak about when we speak about Konyushkov, because we obviously can't read Russian, or I can read Russian because I studied for two years in high school, but I don't remember anything of it because I'm that old. Mm-hmm. But you know, what stands out really is the leadership qualities.
Yep.
We don't see much of it in We see him speaking to the refs. We see him speaking, getting interviewed in the halftime and stuff like that. But you don't see him. He doesn't seem to be that vocal leader in the dressing room.
For sure. I think he leads by example more than anything. In moments where Torpedo didn't really have an answer to their opponents, Konyushkov would come up with one. I think it's really the hockey sense. He leads kind of in the same way that Nick Suzuki leads for the Habs, where he's not the most vocal, he's not the most put the team on my back, and not in terms of ice time. He's not the type of player to put his team on his back in terms of the things that he says and the way that he acts. It's more through his behavior on the ice, the way that he manages the game, and the very, very smart things he does with the puck. That's a big standout for me every time I watch Konyushkov. He is so intelligent. His decision making in transition, in the offensive zone. I rarely see him make a mistake. When he makes a mistake, it's because it's forced and it's due to mechanical issues rather than mental ones. His mental game is super, super solid. So yeah, he's a leader in the way Nick Suzuki is with the Habs.
Indeed, and we talked about that 40-minute game, and he was also on the ice for the late equalizer for SKA, and but there he didn't make a mistake. They were just outplayed, and he had his defender, but his attacker, but there were two attackers that he needed to cover, and obviously the puck went in because of a rebound. But he is there, and he has the physique to box out players. It is the mechanical issues. Again, with the skating, I mentioned that Lekkonen had similar issues when he came to Frölunda and worked on it for 2 years. I would love for Konyushkov to spend the whole summer working with a skating coach, probably one of those figure skating coach that Russia always seems to have around. Don't take any pills or any medication from them, though. But he needs to skate better because hockey sense is there, and when he makes a mistake, he knows what he's done. And he can relate to it and he can change it. But right now, it is the mechanical issues that brings him down a little bit.
Yeah, no, exactly. I think that's the main kind of setback right now, and it's always something that I look for when it comes to prospects. Is there a disconnect between their physical tool and their physical tools and their mental tools? It doesn't just have to be skating; it can also be the physical elements of the game. I think of a guy like Caden Gooley. I think he reads the game fairly well, but he's kind of held back mentally. Because his physical tools are so advanced, sometimes he skates too fast for his own good. With Konyushkov, it's the opposite. I think he's above the game and ahead of the game mentally, but his feet can't keep up. And you mentioned kind of the strength at the net front to box out the slot, that kind of stuff. I think that's a great element of his game, but I would say that I'm more interested in what Konyushkov does when he's facing an opponent that's stronger than him. Because it's one thing to outmuscle an opponent, and he certainly can. Despite his size, he was 5'11", 180 pounds. He has a lot of core strength, a lot of lower body strength, and helps him a lot of upper body strength rather, which helps him, lean on opponents, push them off balance, all that good stuff when they're weaker than him. But when they're stronger than him, what does he do? That's the issue for me, is that because of the mechanical deficiency, he can't leverage his weight as well in puck battles. He can't necessarily get under opponents, body weight wise, and lower center of gravity as easily. Because the edge work and the mechanical fluidity of his skating is lacking, it's actually affecting his physical game, and I think that could be a concern moving forward. But again, he thinks his way out of problems so well. I just want to see him not think his way out of problems, so that he's forced to work on these things through repetitions in game. I think that's the next objective, is tell him like is to coach him on how to put himself in situations where he has to use his mechanics, where he has to work on his mechanics. Because right now he's kind of circumventing the problem. He's kind of tap dancing around it rather than getting to the core of it. And in a way, it's good. I like to see adaptability in prospects, but sometimes it prevents you from working on things that are essential at the NHL level.
Yeah, and let's face it, we mentioned the league quality, and it's not like it's McDavid or Matthews or a big Slavkovsky coming at him. It's below, kind of far below that kind of level of opponents that are coming at him. And you see it sometimes when especially when they come with speed. I think that's my issue with them. Like, speed is only going to be faster in NHL. Even if the rink is smaller, speed goes up and the players are better and comes with more speed in situations where you want him to be a defender. He has a lot of upside on the other end of the ice, and we're going to get to that. But as a defender, you want him to be able to skate. He is, in some ways, the antithesis of skating when it comes to Alexander Romanov.
Yeah, exactly. I think it's the opposite problem. Romanov always had an issue staying on top of play mentally, but it was always on top of play physically. Whether that's through really, really, really fluid skating mechanics. I've always loved Romanov's skating mechanics, or
Were you kidding?
just simply barreling through a player and putting his head through the ice. Like it's just it. He's always been a natural athlete who relied on his athleticism way too much. Whereas with Roman, with Konyushkov, it's the opposite problem where he's never been a natural athlete, but he's always been extremely aware, extremely smart, and the issue stays the same. Romanov's not working on his mental aspects because he's always on top of play physically, and Konyushkov's not working on his physical or mechanical aspects because he's always on top of the play mentally. So they're also like, even though their situations are reversed, the core of the issue is the same. They're not getting to the weaknesses because they're circumventing them with their strength, if that makes sense.
It completely does. And looking at data that we've gotten from Thibault Chatel right now, he projects more to a second line defender in the NHL down the line. He's gotten up, everything has gotten better,
Yeah,
and he's
exactly.
moved tires from being all over the place to top pair, second pair. But I cannot really see him unless he spends the summer and half next season working on his skating, become a top pair, because he doesn't have that skating ability that you need to cover some of those superstars in the NHL.
Yeah, I can't name you a top pair defenseman who's not at least a plus level skater. You know, I don't think there's a single one, and unless you count David Savov for like half the season this season. Like other than that, I don't think there's any bona fide, top pair defenseman on a contender, or at least on a bubble contender that has below average skating like this, or especially not the type of skating issues that Konyushkov has, because there are some skaters that are, there are some average level skaters at the NHL level that are on the top pair, but it's because their skating isn't an issue of fluidity and mechanical problems, it's an issue of strength, right? Whereas with
Konyushkov, he
Konyushkov,
has the strength, but he doesn't have the skill in a way when it
yeah.
comes to he doesn't get that power into the ice and into the edges.
Exactly, and that's the main issue for me. It's also, there's a bit of a wide stance to him. His torso, I think, is a bit too upright at times. Doesn't really lean into his stride, and you can see really it's kind of the mechanics of it. He's not grabbing the ice with the toe of his skate. He's grabbing it more with the middle, with the kind of the ball of his foot, and that means that he's not putting as much weight behind him. He's not pushing further back towards the back of his body in order to create more leverage in each stride. So the mechanical issues are certainly there, but like I said, it really, for me, it all goes through whether Konyushkov figures out a way to work on his weaknesses rather than circumvent them with his strengths. I think that's key regardless.
It's for if you want to go out and try this, start your 100-meter dash or a 60-meter dash. You could even do it a 40-meter dash outside your house and try to accelerate while not using your toes or putting the front foot of down first. Try to accelerate while having your whole foot down. Not going to happen. Talking about his positive things though, offensively he took a small step, but a giant step in regards to KHL development. This year added 3 points. On the other hand, it was with, I forgot it, 3 hours more of ice time. So yeah. And he went from Torpedo had some issues, so he went from +1 to -9 in plus minus rankings, which are not, half of those is probably, empty net goals because he was on the ice for trying to equalize.
Yeah, no, absolutely. But I think the steps forward in the offensive game have been massive. I already, having watched some of his draft year tape and some of his tape this year, there's a significant difference in the way that he approaches the game mentally. I mean, he was always a plus level thinker of the game, but he was constantly trying to kind of create off his stick instead of creating advantages. What I mean by that is he would see passing as an ends to a mean, an end to a means, basically. So he's passing in order to create a primary assist. He's passing to set up a goal every time. Now I see him create plays a bit more incrementally, kind of developing play a bit like chess, where, you set up one move to make a move 5 moves later, which ends up in a goal, right? So that's a big progression for me, is that he's using his intelligence more incrementally rather than trying to kind of produce a point on each play. And that's actually helped his production overall, because it's leading to longer offensive zone sequences. It's leading to, setting up teammates in situations where they're ready to make the next pass rather than just, zipping a pass at their feet, so that they can one time it in the net, right? So it's just that ability to build play incrementally, to develop play in a way that isn't just linear and based on just producing points, I think has been a huge step forward. And he was already so smart with his ability to put his teammates in goal scoring situations, but now that he's using that intelligence to extend offensive zone possessions, to play give and goes from the point, to get the puck back, at the hash marks, play a teammate in the slot for a shot, but then, not stopping there, knowing what the next play is, I think has been huge for his development, along with the development in the puck skills themselves. I think he's become a better puck handler. His decision making on passes has improved. His shot, I haven't really seen enough of to be able to kind of determine where he's at with that. He's mainly been passing in the viewings I've had, but he's been doing that fairly well. So yeah, in terms of offensive development, I think he's taken a step forward for sure in the puck skills and a big step forward in the mental aspect.
We'll be right back after these messages, so please remember to turn your volume down. I don't want you to hit anyone with your car or jump off the platform in the underground if you listen to us there.
Do you want a beautiful lawn? Enter TruGreen, the easiest way to get a great lawn. Just water and mow, and they'll do the rest. Weed control, fertilization, aeration, and more. TruGreen is the official lawn care treatment provider of the PGA Tour, and they have a verified best price, which guarantees you the lowest price with no compromise on quality. You do you. Let TruGreen do your lawn care. Visit TruGreen.com, TruGreen.com, to get the best lawn at the best price with the best people. Guaranteed.
Let's get back to the conversation with Hadi Kalakesh and Patrick Bexell.
I really like his shot. I see the fluidity of his movement in it. I see he's not always going for the net. I'll be honest with that. It's a lot of it is deflections. A lot of it is tap-ins for players shooting to the side of the net. A little bit of typical Russian in a way, shooting to the side of their net rather than so it's hard to get a grasp on his shot. But I kind of like that in a shot because, as you say, it shows high hockey intelligence. It shows that he thinks the game. He knows who's coming where. Even, it's like I shouldn't say this, but anyone can toss a ball to standing still, a person standing still, but to throw it 5 yards ahead, it in full speed in coverage, that's what makes you win Super Bowls.
Yeah, exactly. It's the vision that, yeah, and you mentioned, for me, a touchdown pass is a bit like an area pass in hockey, where you're kind of floating a puck into the space in front of the player and letting him skate into it. I think Konyushkov's gotten really good at that. But regarding the shot, I think the one thing I could say about the shot, because he hasn't really scored any goals in the games I've watched maybe 5 or 6 games of his this season, where I focused on him. And yeah, what I've really noticed is a shot placement. I think that when he's shooting from the point, he's not aiming for corners like an Arbor Jacki does. He's looking to hit the low. He's trying to hit the pads for a rebound when he's shooting from the point, or he's timing a shot with a flyby screen, from a teammate, that kind of thing, for a tap, for a tip, and that kind of stuff. So for me, the shot placement has been excellent. He's always shooting. If there's a chance that there's a teammate in a spot for a tip in, he's shooting at hip level. If there's no one in front. If there's no one kind of screening the goalie looking for a tip-in, but there's options on the, near the dots, he's always going to shoot near the toe of the goaltender to make sure that, the goalie's going to have a hard time controlling the rebound, right? So it's just the selection and placement of his shots has been excellent. But I haven't seen anything power-wise that wows me. It's just that he's, again, just everything goes through his smarts in his game, both defensively and offensively, but especially offensively, in my opinion.
Yeah, he gets a little bit more time offensively. I think that helps him in that regard.
For sure.
And movement, he's stuck to the blue line. He doesn't activate as much as I would hope to see. You know, David Reinbacher didn't activate because, you know, Clawton was terrible.
Yeah.
But exactly. he couldn't, they rarely had the puck in that area with David Reinbacher on the ice because he was so tired after playing defense for 30 minutes. But but I would, with Konyushkov, he's getting those opportunities and it doesn't seem to take them when the opportunity arises. He stands on the blue line and feeds people very nice passes and look for opportunities in a three-dimensional chess game. But I want to see him activate because that's how the new kind of attacking style in NHL is and in SHL and even in National League to a degree. You want people to activate to create that numerical advantage on one end of the ice.
Yeah, for sure. I think it's tactical because he's so smart in every other area of the game. And there are moments where I've seen him play give and goes and get to the hash marks, but he never goes too far with them. And most of the time, I mean, like I said, he's so intelligent that I have a hard time thinking that he doesn't see these things. I think it's really just that tactically he's being enticed and coached to stay at the blue line and make plays from there because he's so good at finding those passing lanes from that spot.
I also see it as you don't want to risk him up because he's not going to get back in time.
Exactly. That's another part of it. It's also playing to his strengths. But yeah, for me, I think it's more of a coaching thing because in every other area of his game, he's shown me every sign that he's intelligent. He's shown me every little detail that I look for when it comes to intelligent defensemen, except for consistent activation down the boards or kind of, you know, switching in coverage with a player that's cycling. Like if a forward cycles with the puck and, you know, goes towards the blue line, cuts in front of him, I don't really see him take the spot of that forward in rotation, right? He just kind of stays there and lets a player skate in front of him. A player this smart should be able to identify these things. So I think he does. I just think that coaching-wise, he's being told that this is what they need from him. But yeah, I mean,
and
I would
again,
need to speak to the coach.
And again, it is a living legend coaching him, so it's tough to break that kind of relationship.
Yeah.
As well.
Exactly. You don't want to contradict Igor Larionov. But yeah, you'd have to speak to him to get that information. But I'm pretty sure that that's what it is.
Yeah. I've graded him at an A-. A lot has to, the minus has to do with the fact that these mechanics that we have been speaking about for a long time, and I shouldn't repeat myself, that we haven't seen an improvement during the season. I think that is why I gave him the minus.
Yeah.
If I had seen a little bit more improvement during the season, not in ice time and not in, you know, leadership role, because that's where he has improved. But if I have seen more mechanical improvement, I think I would have been a flat A. But right now, I give him an A-. I think that's really, really good. I also think, in regards to Alexander Romanov, that is really good that he's going to stay in Russia for two more years because he can't be rushed into a position that he isn't comfortable playing, which was Romanov's problem in a way. They saw Romanov as this guy that lit up the World Juniors and they wanted him to play like that. But that's not his style because, as you said, he's not that smart.
Yeah. Romanov dominated the game physically, and that's what allowed him to produce so well at the World Juniors. What I want to see from Konyushkov moving forward is obviously work on that skating, but it's for me the issue is particularly the efficiency of it because he's only going to be playing more minutes moving forward. Mm-hmm. You know, if he's playing 25, 26 minutes a night on average with Torpedo, you know, by the end of each game, he's the inefficiency in his skating forces him to use more energy in each stride. It's, you know, his skating is pretty much the opposite of Erik Karlsson's, where Erik Karlsson, what made him so, you know, what made him able to play 30 minutes a night with Ottawa was that he put no effort into his skating. The mechanics were so perfect that he didn't require any push, any any energy to be infused into that skating in order to skate at such a high level. You know, Konyushkov has this issue where, you know, when he's skating, he's putting the input of energy is much bigger than the output of energy when it comes to the skating, right? So he's pushing a lot more for each stride than the average, you know, skater, especially by Russian standards. So if that improves, if his skating mechanics and efficiency improves, where he's not pushing as much with each stride, we're not only going to see a player who's more capable defensively, we're also going to see a player who's more capable of taking on more minutes without getting tired.
And, he's going to be able, and probably being used in a different role offensively as well.
Exactly. You know, for me, it's the main issue with that 37-minute game that he played against SKA is that, is that by the end of it, he had nothing. He had no energy because he spent 37 minutes just pushing into the ice without really leveraging his mechanics. So by the end of it, he was exhausted.
I probably mentioned this before, but I have to go back to your Carlson story, like comparison. And I remember watching World Cup of Hockey practice. Carlson was with Frölunda, and you know, everyone was a bit starstruck because Henrik Lundqvist was there as well.
Yeah.
And in the end, Roger Rönnberg said something, "Hey, we need to play hockey," you know. And then Erik, he just took the puck and he just skated around. Mm-hmm. And you heard from Roger Rönnberg, who's a coach I admire a lot.
Yeah.
And he used the F word, but I'm not going to use that here. But it's so effing easy to play hockey, Erik, isn't it? So effing easy.
Love that.
And he makes it look easy. Konyushkov does as well to certain degrees. He has a lot to work with. Do you agree with the grade that is that I gave him an A-? So do you want to give it a flat A or?
I would go with an A- for the same reasons as you did. But, you know, just to be a bit different, I'd give it a B+. There was a bit more that he could have done offensively for me this season, especially with the role he was put in. He could have grabbed more opportunities, like you said, activated a bit more, shown a bit more dare and confidence. If it's really not a coaching thing, I don't know what it is. But overall, I think that for a player whose intelligence has improved so much from last year to this year, I expected a bit more production, a bit more involvement. And yes, he tripled his goal totals, but that's you know, it's four more goals. You know what I mean? So it's for me, it's just how much further can he go with his development and how much he can add to his production in order to kind of solidify himself as the intelligent offensive defenseman he can be, while also working on his skating in order to minimize his defensive issues and take more ice time. So B+ for me.
Even more ice time.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I mean, you know, rather handle the same amount of ice time better, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Exactly.
So he doesn't need to rest the last four games of the season, which he had this year.
Basically, exactly.
When we look at it, though, I spoke with one of the scouts for an NHL team, and a scout that is very well known in KHL and watches KHL a lot. And he said, and I think this speaks a lot and a little bit of what we have mentioned too as well, he is in the right team with the right coach. Mm-hmm. It's a team that is not as well structured as SKA and CSKA and etc. But it's more fun to play in that team compared to the big teams that are too organized almost.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's one thing that I would say really helps in terms of where he's heading with his career, is that a player like this needs freedom and needs the liberty to be able to make mistakes and learn from them. But like I said, he's not really learning much as long as he's using his smarts to circumvent his physical problems. And as soon as that changes, we'll be good, I think. But, you know, a summer working with a skating coach where he's really focusing on the mechanics, working on, you know, focusing on where he's leveraging his weight, which part of his body's activating when he's skating, I think will be a big, big step forward in his development. But we aren't there yet. So I think that needs to come a certain way. But again, if he was playing with SKA or CSKA or Dynamo or any of these stronger teams that are a lot, like you said, more structured, more systematic than Torpedo is, I don't think he would have the same progression in his game as he has right now with Torpedo.
No, and you can just look at it from Romanov's angle again. He had the pedigree, the name, and the legendary name, really, not only because of the Tsar name, but also because his father and grandfather, who was part of CSKA and their history. And he got to play 14 minutes a game, and we thought that was amazing. And if Bogdan would have played for one of those teams, he would have played, you know, 10 minutes a game maximum.
Yeah, exactly, which is not good for any prospect's development. But again, maybe this year they would have been forced to use him in a better situation. He is 21, after all. He's not a draft eligible. But I don't know. I don't think he would have gotten a 37-minute game for sure with any of those teams. That's 100% certain.
His average ice time would not be 23 minutes.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
So there is that. But, I mean, there's pros and cons with it. I think he's in for a long summer camp where he will have the opportunity to work on his skating. I'm not sure that Adam Nicholas would get a chance to talk with him that much, but it's probably something that they already talk about. Going back to that interview with Larionov that Niklas Kultier had, and it's the fact that, you know, I can see him as a key player on a KHL team. He already is for Torpedo. But I still doubt that he's not ready to be a key player in NHL just yet.
No, I don't think so either. I think if he was in the NHL, if he was in North America this season, he'd be more likely to be competing with Logan Mailloux on the top AHL pair than he would be to be competing for any sort of top four role with the Habs. And even I don't think he would be, you know, it'd be stretching it, and it'd be really optimistic to say that he'd be competing for a bottom pair role with the likes of Kovacevic and Struble.
And that's not really a development either. So it would have been better to keep him in AHL.
Exactly. I don't think he would be developing in that circumstance.
But so that would have been a very nice, you know, right line for Aval, you know.
Oh, yeah, for
Ryan
sure.
Backer, Mayu, and Kurnyushkov.
And Barron.
And you Barron, know, like, yeah, well, I don't count him anymore. He's an expiring deal, right?
I mean, there's so much. Like I said at the very start of this video, like there's so much defense-wise with the Canadians and their pipeline, and their immediate pipeline, at least, in Montreal and Laval, that, I mean, where would you slot him if he did? I think, you know, he's in the perfect seat right now, and you can let him develop, see what he turns into, and if in 2 years, you know, you see those progresses and you get him into the North American system and he's performing well in Laval, I think he can work his way up to, at the best, the number four defenseman. I think he, you know, a second pair, you know, especially if Jaden Struble continues the progress that he's been on so far, a second pair of Struble and Konyushkov would be a very complementary, very beneficial pair. But in 2 years, we're also talking about Lane Hutson in that conversation. We're also talking about David Reinbacher in this conversation. So, you know, along with Caden Gooley, that's five defensemen.
Adam Engstrom has been playing his offside for the last, you know, half season.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, we could slot him at the right side, but then, who, I mean, that's the thing. The Habs have so many options. It's just like, who goes where? I think in 2 years' time, we're talking probably about a second pair of Hutson and Reinbacher that works its way up to a top pair in 3 to 4 years. You know, if Matheson stays, maybe that Matheson-Gooley line stays together, but I'd much rather see Matheson on his offside than Caden Gooley. This has not been working for him. And then, yeah, after that, you have like a billion options. So, yeah, the Habs are stacked on D. I really want them to add a forward this draft and go for the highest upside one as well.
There you have it. We'll be back with Hadi later on. I hope you have enjoyed this podcast, even if we did disagree, not by much. But we saw different things, and hopefully you have a better understanding of Bogdan Konyushkov and the KHL right now. Where can we find you, Hadi?
You can find me at HadiK underscore scouting on Twitter. That's a one-stop shop for everything I do. Videos, podcasts, scouting reports, articles, all that good stuff. I'm at, if you look up my name at Habs Eyes on the Prize, it'll come across my Across the Border and Catching the Torch segments, where I break down the Habs North American prospects. And yeah, I've got a channel on YouTube where I've been putting out rankings, scouting reports, all that good stuff. It's Hadi Kalakesh, NHL Draft Scouting.
There you have it. Make sure to follow Hadi. Make sure to ask him questions. I'm sure he will answer them when he has the time, because he is a busy man. Thank you so much, Hadi.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
This episode was brought to you by Bet Online. We'll be right back.
you want a beautiful lawn? Enter True Green, the easiest way to get a great lawn. Just water and mow and they'll do the rest. Weed control, fertilization, aeration, and more. True Green is the official lawn care treatment provider of the PGA Tour. And they have a verified best price, which guarantees you the lowest price with no compromise on quality. You do you. Let True Green do your lawn care. Visit TrueGreen.com, TrueGreen.com to get the best lawn at the best price with the best people. Guaranteed.
You know when you're listening to a true crime story that has an unbelievable plot twist that makes you stop in your tracks? That's what our podcast, People Are the Worst, brings you with each episode. I'm Rachel.
And I'm Rebecca. We're identical twins who love true crime cases that make you say, "Didn't see that coming," and we hate the people responsible for them. Listen to People Are the Worst now on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.